Hello and welcome back to another episode of LSHTM Viral. My name is Amy Thomas.
We can learn an awful lot from our ability to cope in adversity.
Because if we don't, we really could see to a really greater loss of human life and economic losses in the coming decades.
Human health is influenced by the Earth's natural systems, the wildlife around us, and the environment we create. The COVID-19 virus, which is thought to originate from bats, is just one example of what happens when this fine-tuned balance is tipped. The spread of infectious diseases may be linked to climate factors in animals, but the consequences can tell us even more about the health of people and of our planet.
The destruction of habitat is bringing us in closer proximity with wildlife, and it's raising the risk of viruses jumping from animals to humans.
This is Dr. Rachel Lowe. Rachel is an associate professor at LSHTM, working in the interface between the Centre for Mathematical Modelling and the Centre on Climate Change and Planetary Health. Rachel has been researching environmental factors and COVID-19, but is particularly interested in the idea that human health is dependent on the environment.
This is something that really needs to be addressed, how we are interacting with our environment, and looking at this problem in terms of a One Health framework, so thinking about how humans, animals are interacting in the environment. So we really need to be thinking about how humans coming into close contact with animals through unsustainable development programs, which are causing deforestation and land use, creating very unhealthy environments, both for wildlife and for humans. Our research focuses on trying to understand how the climate and environment interact with socioeconomic factors to determine the risk of different infectious diseases. We mainly work on mosquito-borne diseases such as dengue, Zika, and malaria, and try and understand how climate information might help us predict when and where an outbreak might be more likely to occur. There have been lots of questions about how the spread of SARS-CoV-2 will happen in the summer months. And this is mainly based on hypotheses from other respiratory viruses, such as influenza and other seasonal coronaviruses, which are typically thought to be more effectively transmitted in dry and cold climates. So there's been lots of speculation about how the disease may spread as the Northern Hemisphere moves into summer and in warmer months. But recent studies have shown that the disease seems to be spreading very effectively in the Southern Hemisphere, in countries which experience warm and very humid climates at the moment. So we're seeing that the disease is effectively being transmitted in South America, also in Africa, at the same sort of rates we're seeing in some of the worst affected countries in Europe. We're facing a novel virus, and the global population has no previous immunity to this. So it's able to transmit very effectively through a totally susceptible population.
And Rachel teamed up with the modellers here at LSHTM to co-author a preprint paper on this.
So we mapped the World Health Organization status of COVID transmission as either imported or local, and compared that to daily averages of temperature and relative humidity for the January to March season, which is a period when local transmission would have initiated in most places. And another study led by scientists in LSHTM in the Gambia have also found that the disease is also transmitting very effectively in countries in West Africa, which is hugely worrying given the vulnerability of the healthcare systems there. Modelling studies will have to focus on trying to understand how environmental factors are interacting with underlying other factors such as population density, human behaviour, how contacts are either increased or decreased by different climate conditions. But any sort of forecasts or projections based on climate information alone are not advisable.
And this highlights the multitude of factors as well as climate that contribute to an outbreak. But what about the consequences?
Well, we've never really seen this scale of slowdown of economies and of travel.
This is Professor Alan Dangour. Alan is the director for the Centre on Climate Change and Planetary Health at LSHTM.
A few years ago, of course, there was the volcano that erupted in Iceland, which had a substantial impact on travel air travel, but didn't really have a big impact on economies. So we're learning new things, and we're seeing innovation, and we're seeing opportunities. There have been new data released on nitrogen dioxide pollutions, and they've plummeted compared to last year. And that's going to carry on. What we don't know is when this pandemic ends and we transition out of the state we're currently in, do economies bounce back? Does travel just immediately return? How will people respond to the change?
We've seen that efforts to control the COVID-19 pandemic have reduced economic activity and have contributed to localized improvements in air quality. But it is too early to assess the implications of greenhouse gas concentrations. We have seen that CO2 levels at key observing stations, for example, in Hawaii, still higher than last year. And the World Meteorological Organization have warned that any cuts in emission as a result of the economic crisis triggered by this pandemic is no substitute for climate action. The response to this pandemic in terms of government intervention has been rigorous, but the response to climate change and its threat to human health has been weak. I think it's partly due to the nature of the threat, how immediate that threat feels to individuals. But from every catastrophe, we have an opportunity. And I really think we need to find ways as a society to avoid going back to business as usual. We're going to have to be careful that as we come out of this crisis, we don't sort of return to normal and then we'll see a huge upsurge in emissions. We really need to change that trajectory. We need to think how we can shift to more environmentally friendly ways of working, of traveling. We need to really think about how we can use this experience to help mitigate against emissions, because if we don't, we really could see to a really greater loss of human life and economic losses in the coming decades.
What we've seen with COVID is the government has set down a set of very clear rules on what activities are allowed and what activities are not allowed. And we've seen broadly that people, certainly in the UK, have responded and have responded appropriately. And that gives you a lot of cheer when you're thinking about responses to other emergencies, such as the climate emergency. We're seeing that government, when it wants to take action, can be clear and certain in its action, and that the public is willing to respond. Climate change and the necessary responses of governments around the world to climate change will take much longer. And so whether or not we will see the same level of response from the public to the recommendations and the demands of governments in a response to climate change is a different matter. Because, of course, everything will need to change. We'll need to change how we travel, how we work, how what we eat, how we heat our homes, how we build our homes. Massive changes are required as a response to mitigate the effects of climate change, and then, of course, to adapt to the consequences of the changing climate.
And how do we adapt to the consequences of climate change while also retaining trust in the scientific community?
So engagement is really important so that people are interested in these topics. We don't know the answers, but to ignore what is coming down the line just because we don't know exactly the impact is crazy. That's absolutely crazy. And clearly that doesn't make sense. We recognize there's very, very overwhelming evidence to suggest that the climate is changing in very dangerous ways. And just because we cannot state exactly how that will affect our lives or our well-being or our children's lives doesn't mean that it's not a real feature. So engaging people in that discussion and understanding is really, really critical. Increasing trust is something we've got to work on. That's something which is easily lost. And so, for scientists, we must always be balanced and careful and considered in our statements.
We're very lucky that we have access to near real-time estimates of hourly information about the climate, so we know how temperature, humidity, precipitation patterns, even UV radiation and air quality indicators. We have access to this high quality information, which can help us understand how different populations may be at risk. And we can also use that information and forecast to understand and plan mitigation actions. So for example, in places that are expected or experiencing extreme drought, what are the challenges for providing adequate sanitation and hygiene measures in those places to allow people to maintain hand hygiene, which is such an important part of preventing the spread of this disease. Previous studies have looked at sort of a combination of laboratory studies and also population level studies for influenza, for example, and they found that humidity is particularly linked to the seasonality of these diseases, but that's of course in a population where there is some immunity that has been built up. But the mechanisms are still not entirely clear, and we don't know how much of the seasonality in diseases such as influenza is due to climatic factors or due to school holidays, for example. So it's still really an area of active research, and more quantitative studies are needed to pick apart how meteorological factors play a role in determining the seasonality of respiratory viruses.
Several people said we must be prepared for future pandemics. We must improve our ability to respond, to act, and to save the lives of people. That work was done, but as we're seeing, lots of it wasn't done, and preparedness could have been improved in many ways. What we must do is we must prepare ourselves much better for the potential huge impacts of climate change on everything we do. We are experiencing an unprecedented event, and we can learn an awful lot from our ability to cope in adversity and our willingness to make substantial changes, not just look after ourselves, but to look after our communities and our country. And for me, that's hugely valuable and very heartwarming to see the extent that governments and people are willing to change to tackle major events, because that is what is going to be needed, not only to defeat this pandemic, but also in the future to tackle the impacts of climate change.
Strong and resilient messages from both Rachel and Alan. If you would like to find out more about COVID-19, you can visit our website lshtm.ac.uk/coronavirus. We are holding another Q&A session on modelling during the COVID-19 outbreak on Friday, the 1st of May. We want to know your questions, so please get in touch with us and we will try and answer them in the session. You can contact us on comms@lshtm.ac.uk. Remember to subscribe if you haven't already. Share the podcast with your colleagues, your friends, and anyone who you think would be interested. Thanks again for listening, and take care.